This podcast is part of the Podcavern Network. Check out other Podcavern shows at podcavern.com. Oneiric. Year 3 and a few weeks, plus one day. You know, Deirdre, the thought occurs that if I had the doing of it again, I should just use the date on these recordings, or number them, possibly. I mean, it all seemed to make sense at the very beginning, you know. Day one, day two, that worked fine, didn't it? I'm loath to change it now, though, for some reason. Well, such is my whimsical way, I guess. I'm also bushed. We had a big day, Dee. It's probably past midnight now, and we made it back to Lana's less than an hour ago. Haven't listened to Poulenc in a bit, have we? This is called, it's a bit of a mouthful, L'Ode de Saint-Antoine de Padoue. Terrific little piece, though your guess as to who Saint-Antoine de Padoue was is as good as mine. Right. We went to see the hatch. The one Lana told us about. It turned into something of a day trip. An adventure. We talked about the hatch during breakfast. No sooner had we said grace than the topic surfaced. Not particularly surprising. Val is obsessed with hatches, as you know. And, well, I have to admit they're pretty important to me too, as they are to anyone on the big long road. I'll guide you to it, Lana said between bites of waffles. Waffles, Dee. Lana keeps a wondrous kitchen for someone who's essentially a hermit. We'll have to be careful, however, Lana said. I have a feeling the hatch is guarded.
A feeling? Val said.
Yes, Lana said. I've never seen any guardian around the hatch, but when I've been near it, I had this definite sensation that I was being watched. Once I think I saw a shadow coming out of the lake. Out of the lake, I repeated like an idiot. I didn't like that. My blood ran cold a bit there, I won't lie, Dee. Yes, I didn't press my luck. I'm not on the big long road. We washed the dishes and left. I don't know what Val carries for a weapon. Whatever it is, he keeps it in his backpack. But I'll tell you, I was glad to have my sword with me. The hatch is about a 10-kilometer walk away from Lana's cabin. We took it slow, so about 2 hours. A saunter, really. We had time to talk. Not that it mattered all that much in the end. Lana is very cagey about herself, particularly her past. Any chit-chat about where she's from, how she ended up here, who her parents are, is sort of not ignored as such, but within a few sentences, strangely devoid of any real information, you find yourself talking about your own self. So, by the time we got to the lake with the hatch, Lana knew about Herr Gustavo and Danica and you and your mother, Dee, as well as Val's particular journey. He's an orphan, brought up by monks, it turns out. News to me as well. While we were just as much in the dark about her as when we'd started out. Usually, you hear the hatch about 1,200 meters out, give or take. This one, we nearly tripped over, because it made no sound. It looked dead. And it was dead. Lana was looking toward the lake warily as we approached. I don't want to spook you guys, she said, But last time, I honestly thought it was something like a dragon coming out of the water. I didn't stay.
Oh dear. A dragon in a lake, D. This was getting better and better. I loosened my sword in its scabbard, just like in a fantasy movie.
But when Val finally put his hand down on the hatch's console, the guardian didn't come out of the lake. And it was not a dragon. It came out from behind the tree line, and it was a bear.
That's weird, said Lana. I could have sworn it was a dragon last time.
Val shot her a real sharp glance at that.
Anyway, it might as well have been a dragon. It was enormous. 10-15 meters long from tail to snout. Its back was 3 times as high as a tall man standing. When it emerged out of the forest, it was like the trees were parting, like golden curtains before it. It started to amble toward us, each of its boulder-like paws hitting the ground like an earthquake. One of its paws was metal, I noticed. So was half its face, actually.
The thing about a gigantic cyborg bear coming at you is, there's no real way to tell a happy gigantic bear from a bothered gigantic bear. That wasn't for me, in any case. So, only noting en passant that I was glad I was wearing newish self-cleaning underwear, I took out my sword and hit my stance. Looking good there, if I say so myself. Herr Gustavo would have been proud. I was going down, but I was going down fighting and defending my friends.
Val and Lana, though, my friends, they could tell bear moods much better than I could. They both immediately gestured for me to put the sword away.
Val was a bit frantic about it. They were seeing something I wasn't.
I am here, said the bear in the most skull-rattling, fadamped rumble you can imagine.
I can't really do it justice.
And what do you know? That bear was neither happy nor angry. It was despondent.
Guardian of the hatch. Guardian of the broken hatch. Guardian of nothing.
Mir turned its massive head toward Val, baring its fangs. Most were yellow, but a few gleamed like blue steel.
But I am its guardian still, he said. Step away.
Val did just that. Hands up, goofy grin frozen on his face. No argument.
It took all the courage I had and some change. It's always more frightening to talk than it is to fight. But I stood straight and called out,
What happened to it?
The bear shrugged, and it was like seeing a two-story house kind of ripple.
I don't know, it said. It stopped singing long ago, long enough for the flow of people to dry up. It was never a well-traveled hatch in the first place. I had nothing else to do, nowhere else to go. So I stayed.
Val and Lana and I all exchanged glances. Val's eyes darted to the console and back to me. He nodded as though saying,
We're going to be okay.
That gave me my next question in the sequence. What's the usual price to step through when the hatch is in function? I asked.
The bear fixed its cybo eye on me. I could see the lenses flipping and rotating in there as it focused.
There's a riddle.
Of course there fadamt was. I nearly swore, but I was determined to remain polite.
Would you like us to repair it? I said, hoping I was taking Val's meaning.
Others have tried, said the bear, turning its head away from me.
That was one fadumped morose plantigrade, D.
I turned to Val, who was still nodding.
Others were not us, I said.
Yeah, said Val.
We know our hatch is Mir. If anyone can fix it, it's probably us.
Gingerly, he gestured toward the console.
May I?
The bear cocked its head.
Go on.
There was the tiniest flutter of hope in its growl.
You know, how about Poulenc's piano concerto?
Not sacred music, I realize, but une fois n'est pas coutume.
Val puttered about for a few minutes, then he stepped back and said,
I think we can get somewhere with this. It'll take a while, though. Vance, you'll have to get some parts and infuse them. Can you do that?
I'm not quite the hatch expert that Val is, but I'm getting pretty good, and I knew exactly what he wanted. I glanced at Lana.
Sure,
I said. Lana can take me around the neighborhood, or give me a map or something. Would that be all right, Lana?
Of course, Lana said. I'm sure we can find what we need in Aiche.
I got the feeling she was enjoying the outing.
What say you, Mir? I called out.
Do you want us to repair this hatch?
The look of forlorn, hoping against hope, longing I spied on this colossal beast's face as it pondered. It really made my day a little brighter, Deirdre. I mean, we certainly projected a distinct air of confidence. And why not?
Val was right. We do know our hatches. Poor old suffering Mir couldn't help but be a bit impressed.
I'll tell you what, though, I said, struck by a sudden inspiration. If we do fix it, you'll let us through. No questions asked.
He blinked.
There's a riddle. He repeated.
Yeah,
I said. You'll waive the riddle.
But I love the riddle.
The bear protested limply. Lana grinned at me, stifling a laugh.
Val said, Well, we can live without it.
Precisely, I said. Don't take this the wrong way, Mir, but the fewer riddles in my life, the better I feel. The bear tipped its head thoughtfully toward the ground. It was like a shuttle going over a cliff.
So, do we have a deal?
I asked. If we can make the hatch functional again, you let us through without a test, and you keep the riddle for the next saps to come along. Yes? Another minute. Mir's breath was like a warm Sirocco in my face. I think he had a cold.
Yes,
he finally said.
Then he added, almost savagely,
What if you can't repair it? What happens then?
I considered that.
What do you propose?
I said.
I think I might eat you all,
he said, with some spite.
Deal,
said Val without a pause. Lana and I goggled at him a bit, but Val gestured cheerfully and mouthed,
We can fix it.
I wasn't entirely reassured, Dee, but there we were. So we spent the rest of the day tinkering, testing, finagling, making lists. We have a reasonable idea what needs to be done. Tomorrow, Val will go back there and keep at it. I have errands to run. Lana has kindly offered to accompany me. I'm not really scared we'll get eaten by a giant cyborg bear, but the mere possibility is somewhat motivating. So, goodbye for now, Dee. It might be a while before my next recording. Keep me in your prayers. All my best to you, your husband, your mother, and the rest of the household.
Notes to Oneiric, Year 3 and a Few Weeks, plus one day. By Tefer Troy, Doctoral Candidate, Alternative Narrative Traditions, Université de Montréal, February 9th, 684. UDM ID TT 603-782. As I have noted in earlier episodes, references and allusions to Stephen King's The Dark Tower abound in Oneiric. Mir, the giant, partly robotic bear that guards the hatch, is borrowed directly from The Wastelands, the third volume of The Dark Tower. In King's version, the bear is also a literary reference, this time to Shardik, the giant bear from the novel of the same name by Richard Adams, better known as the author of Watership Down. Mir is peace in Russian, of course, though exactly what Lauzon and indeed King mean by the name is less than obvious. It is interesting to note how offhandedly the narrative does away with the notion of the riddle as a key to the next stage in the adventure, after having spent quite a lot of time establishing its importance in earlier sections. But as several of the characters have noted, we are not quite done with riddles. Saint-Antoine de Padoue is a 13th century Roman Catholic saint. There is an oft-repeated story about Saint-Antoine preaching near the seashore until a great school of fish had gathered to hear him speak. The saint then castigated the heretics of the church by telling them that the fish heard the word of God better than they did, at which point the heretics, abashed, agreed to listen to him. Peterson, in his essay Oneiric, Dreams and Dreamers, holds that the author uses this reference to make a point about his own audience, but that seems too clever by half, and I don't find Peterson's reasoning convincing. In my view, the author likes Poulenc as a composer first and foremost. I wouldn't expect any elaborate thematic relevance from the title of the piece.
Have you ever seen those lists on the internet that's like top 5 sandwich toppings, top 5 movies of the year, top 5 celebrities who have a very punchable face? You know what I'm talking about. The point is, all these lists drive us crazy because we have no idea who made them and how they even narrowed down their top 5 list. That's where my podcast comes in. My name is Tung Law and I am the host of Ranked. Top 5 lists of stuff that don't matter. In every episode, with the help of a motley crew of self-proclaimed experts, we debate, battle, and work together, showing you the entire process of how we got there to create a top 5 list of any and every topic we can think of, like top 5 brunch menu items, top 5 fictional dogs, top 5 90s songs, top 5 Steves. The list goes on, and we will not rest till we rank basically everything. So join us every second Thursday in the Pod Cavern for Ranked, top 5 lists of stuff that don't matter.
Top 5, top 5, top 5.